Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Russia is hardly out of the news these days, whether it's their involvement in the conflict in Syria or the alleged nerve gas attack on a spy in Britain or cheating in sport. When Vladimir Putin was voted in as president at the weekend with a large majority, very few world leaders got in contact with him to congratulate him, although US President Donald Trump did and was criticised for it. Meanwhile, Britain has expelled Russian diplomats and said that the royal family won't be represented at the FIFA World Cup in Russia this summer. It all has a bit of a Cold War feel to it. But how has this relationship between Russia and Europe in particular become so frosty? In studio now to give us his thoughts on the matter, we have Ray Kinsella, Professor of Banking and Financial Services and Healthcare at UCD Michael Smurfit Graduate School of Business. You're very welcome to the show, Ray.
Many thanks, Rob. Thank you.
Yeah. First of all, Ray, is the Russian Federation, the USSR, in different clothes?
Emphatically not. The implosion of the Soviet Union was a historic event, and it created an enormous number of opportunities which politicians in Russia were keen to avail of. One thinks of President Mikhail Gorbachev and his rapport with the then US president. I mean, this was a game changer. The old Soviet Union, that kind of mindset, was gone. But it was a missed opportunity because the West really didn't know what to do with it. The Berlin Wall was down. Russia was going along with the creation of a whole new scenario. And I think the West blew that opportunity for peace, or building peace with the new Russia.
Yeah. So you think there was really an opportunity there to build a stronger connection and draw Russia into a more democratic, a more open kind of society, and we sort of left them out there in the cold?
Yes, there was. Bear in mind that was Russia and the Russian identity long before the Soviet Union. Right. The Soviet Union was an appalling Marxist aberration. Yeah. And when it collapsed, it was widely welcomed within Russia, not by everybody, but certainly by the leader Gorbachev. He saw this as a new opportunity, and so did America. Yeah. And it was one of those strange historical inflection points in getting Russia to agree to the reunification of Germany and to a whole new regime. The West committed itself to not threatening Russia, the new Russia, by moving arms up to its borders. That's precisely what it did.
Yeah.
And that's created an environment in which Russia is basically encircled by NATO and the West.
Yeah.
And this has triggered a response from Russia.
Yeah.
In terms of Europe, you can look at a map and you can look at the deployment of nuclear weapons, manpower, systems, and you can see they have really pushed Russia into a corner, despite the very clear commitments not to do that, and contrived a situation in which two things happened. First of all, the hegemony of the West, particularly of America, is reinforced. And secondly, in which Russia is basically provoked into tit-for-tat, into ramping up new weaponry systems, which is so unstable globally and for Europe. It's not what Europe should be about.
Yeah. I mean, so Russia's in pretty much a defensive posture, but sort of an aggressive defensive posture, you might call it. But I mean, how much of a threat is Russia really to the West?
Well, I'm not an apologist for Russia, let me make that clear. But I'm very conscious, like so many people, of the crisis that has been created by the West in, for example, its invasion of Libya, in its invasion of Iraq, which was based on, as we know now, lies. So how much of a threat is it, Rob? I don't think it is. I think the whole rationale of change in Russia was precisely to create a new environment, to have a new Russia accepted within the European subcontinent. Yeah. And I think the West, in its strategy, has made this impossible. Yeah. And it shouldn't be like that. I mean, one of the points I've been making and writing about this is that now the militarization of Europe, in its scale, in what it's done to countries, in what it's institutionalized in the form of a European army, is so much of greater a threat to stability than Brexit, for example, is. We're looking at the institutionalization of military systems, an aggressive posture, a European army, when the whole point about Europe in the first place was peace, to build peace, to build sort of peace and engagement and openness. That hasn't happened.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in Ireland we've been very proud of our neutrality in years gone by. You know, the emergence of a European army that, you know, would be controlled by a sort of a European headquarters, if you like, in which we would have really only a small say, and yet, you know, Irish men would be a part of that army. I mean, is this the direction we should be going?
Well, let's be clear. Neutrality is regarded by most people in Ireland as a wholly good thing, not as a way of opting out of responsibilities, but as a way of witnessing to the power of a peaceful system of governance across the world. Now, what's happened really, in my view, is that successive governments have played ducks and drakes with neutrality. Some years ago, the former Taoiseach Enda Kenny said what probably was widely felt within official circles, namely, you know, neutrality doesn't count for much. It's a bit of a diversion. It's a distraction. Not to the people of Ireland. Mm-hmm. Not when you look at the challenges facing Europe at the moment. I mean, it would be my view that we need a referendum to confirm Ireland's neutral status. The way that it's been treated in successive treaties has been wholly inadequate. And now more than ever, the action of the government last December of drawing Ireland into PESCO, which is an institutional structure that supports militarization, which is led by France and Germany, and Rob, which plays to the whole reason we have a military-industrial complex, namely to prioritise the creation and deployment of weapons, massively destructive weapons, over building peace, the welfare of countries and the common good. Yeah. I think the way governments have treated, recently the Taoiseach talked about it, saying, well, it's a new form of neutrality. That, in my view, completely misses the point. Yeah. We're being sucked into a European army. And moreover, we're paying for it 2% per year of GDP across Europe with money we can't afford.
Yeah.
And just let me make this point. Recently, Sister Stan was talking about the wholly inadequate response to homelessness in Ireland. Now, it's simply a fact that money hasn't been spent on that. So how is it that a rational, sensible, sensitive government, sensitive to our problems, would say, we can't afford money on housing, but you know what? We can afford money to fund weapon systems that are wholly destructive to what Europe is about.
Yeah. It's not a direction we want to be going. Look, should Europe be wanting and helping Russia to succeed as a democratic nation, as a free market economy? You know, what do you make of the UK's hostility towards Russia? Is it justified?
Well, what happened recently in Salisbury was appalling. Now, in saying that, you have to say, is there a system of governance there in that whole area of nerve gas which should take charge of this task and provide the evidence that's available to Russia and to the systems that look after these areas, that hasn't happened. In fact, probably the most sensible person, it seems to me, in Britain has been Jeremy Corbyn. Now, I wouldn't be a particularly avid follower of his politics, but he struck a very sensible note. You know, these are massive issues. You need to look at the facts and the evidence. You need to look at them openly. Making allegations where the evidence hasn't been presented to the public creates tensions, reinforces anti-Russian sentiment. And do remember, I suppose, that in the last 15, 20 years, a country that has been trying to re-establish itself, to recalibrate its relationships with its neighbours, to get the economy moving, and has been seriously constrained by the imposition of sanctions, which economically are a negative-sum game. Nobody benefits from that. I think our approach is completely misconceived. Let me put a positive thing to it. Imagine a conference in 2022 at which the head of the European Commission and whoever the Russian president is says, look, we've been engaging in talks in the United Nations and everywhere else, and what we're going to work towards is a pan-European security arrangement and a pan-European open market. Now, we're looking at, in Ireland, at markets, and Britain's looking at markets. Can you imagine the positivity that would be created by Russia and by Europe coming together to create? I mean, what a single market that would be. Yeah. And it's feasible. Yeah. It's the legacy mindsets and it's the cult of militarization that is drawing us into a dark and bleak place that we've seen before in Europe.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, we are an interesting place. I suppose one of the questions that comes to my mind is that, you know, does it sometimes serve governments to have a big bad boy out there that we can sort of point to? Does it help sort of unify the troops at home? Is that a part of what's going on in something like this?
It's partly what politics, a certain kind of politics, is all about. You need an enemy. You need hostility to garner support at home, to deflect from what isn't being done. And as I said earlier, Rob, I'm no apologist for Russia, but Russia serves that role extremely well. Mm. I mean, what is, you know, what's unfathomable is how, let's say in Europe, a country like Greece can be ground into the ground by debts upon debts upon debts, and yet Europe can find the money to build this vast army. It really doesn't make an awful lot of sense. The main beneficiaries from this, without doubt, are the very large so-called defence industries. Yeah. I saw a figure quoted recently where Boeing are hoping to achieve $50 billion a year. That's their target. Now, if you look across the spread of expenditures, Rob, and you look at what America is spending on arms and systems, on updating its nuclear capabilities, you're talking trillions.
Yeah.
And the main beneficiaries are the so-called defense industry. I repeat again, it's not what Europe should be about. And we should be completely opposed to being drawing into this malign system.
Ray Kinsella, Professor of Banking and Financial Services and Healthcare at the UCD Michael Smurfit Graduate School of Business. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.